नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter number 70, Lord Krishna's Daily Activities, text number 18. Tatropavishta paramasane vibhur. Tatropavishta paramasane vibhur. Svabhasa kakubhogabhyasayan. Babo svabhasa kakubhogabhyasayan. Grito nrisimhe yadubhi yadutamo. Tatropavishta paramasane
vibhur.
Abhosvabhasa kakubho vyabhasayan. Seated. Paramasane. On his exalted throne. Vibhu, the Almighty Supreme Lord. Babo, Shom. Swa, with his own. Vasa, effulgence. Kakuba, all the quarters of the sky. Avabhasayan, making glow. Vrita, surrounded. Nr, among men. Simhai, by lions. Yadubi, by the Yadus. Yadu Uttama, the most excellent of the Yadus. Yata, like. Uru Raja, the moon. Divi, in the sky. Taraka Ganai, surrounded by the stars. Translation. As your mighty Supreme Lord would seat himself upon his exalted throne there in the assembly hall, he shone with his unique effulgence, illuminating all the quarters of space. Surrounded by the Yadus, lions among men, that best of the Yadus appeared like the moon amidst many stars. Text number 19. And there, O King, jesters would entertain the Lord by displaying various comic moods. Expert entertainers would perform for him, and female dancers would dance energetically. Therefore, Srila Vishvanatha Chakrabarti points out that the word Natacharya refers, among other things, to expert magicians. All of these different entertainers, one after the other, would perform for the Lord in the assembly of great kings. We'll read on a bit more. Text number 20. These performers would dance and sing to the sounds of mridangas, veenas, murugas, flutes, cymbals and conchals, while professional poets, chroniclers and panegyrists would recite the Lord's glories. Text number 21. Some brahmanas sitting in that assembly hall would fluently chant Vedic mantras, while others recounted stories of past kings of highest renown. Text number 22. Once a certain person arrived in the assembly, O king, who had never been seen there before. The doorkeepers announced to him the Lord and then escorted him inside. That person bowed down to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, and with joined palms he described to the Lord how a number of kings were suffering because Jarasandha had imprisoned them. Text number 24. 20,000 kings who had refused to submit absolutely to Jarasandha during his world conquest had been forcibly imprisoned by him in the fortress named Girivraja. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that these kings refused the payment of tribute and other forms of submission to Jarasandha. Also, there is a well-known account in the Mahabharata and other literatures that Jarasandha desired to worship Mahabhairava by offering him the lives of 100,000 kings in sacrifice. So before we continue, we'll just stop there for now. Amagana Trimanandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Umlitam Yena Tasma Shri Guru Maha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Garadhara Shiva Sari Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So text number 18 and 19 and 20 and 21, we're all continuing the further descriptions of Krishna's residence within the city of Dwarka. So in Dwarka Dham, because it is one of the Dhams, the holy Dham, Krishna, as we were hearing yesterday, was explained as being like the jewel amongst human beings. And in this verse, another nice description of Krishna's appearance was like the moon amidst many stars. So you can imagine that Krishna is the best of all human beings. So many wonderful, wonderful qualities, and also his body radiates a transcendental effulgence. So we can meditate upon the moon in the sky stands out amongst all the other luminaries in the sky. So Krishna was also standing out amongst all the other personalities amongst the Yadu dynasty who were in this great assembly hall. And in this assembly hall, Krishna is enjoying various forms of entertainment. We're hearing about court jesters would be there creating a comical mood, other entertainers, magicians and so forth, female dancers, musicians playing various instruments, reciting the Lord's glories, brahmanas chanting various Vedic hymns. So very picturesque atmosphere, very, very transcendental spiritual atmosphere, very auspicious. So it's interesting how we read how there were court jesters and entertainers in this assembly hall where Krishna and the Yadus had assembled together. So Prabhupada, I was reading, explains that kings during Vedic times, they would obviously be a lot of anxiety running a kingdom, lots of pressure, lots of anxieties and so forth, just like if anybody's ever been in managerial positions before or positions of responsibility, then there's always some sort of anxiety that has to come along with that. But human life is actually full of anxiety. There's always going to be anxieties. We just can't avoid that. So especially for people who are running or ruling or overseeing In this case, obviously Krishna overseeing the city of Dwaraka. So, because there was anxiety there, then entertainers would be called in to create a jovial atmosphere, you know, before the day's proceedings began, with all the intricacies and dealings and diplomacy that would go on throughout the day. And these entertainers would be there to create a light-hearted mood. And Prabhupada would say that he would tell a story of in Bengal there's a famous personality called Gopal Bhan. And Prabhupada would sometimes recite stories about Gopal Bhan, who was also a jester for the king at the time. And there's one story how the king said to Gopal Bhan one time, because they'd enjoy joking words with each other, so the king would say to Gopal Bhan one time, what is the difference between you, Gopal, and an ass? So Gopal Bhan replied, he measured the distance between him and the king, and said, about 3 feet. That is the distance between me and an ass. So in this way, the king would enjoy joking words with Gopal Bhan and create a light-hearted mood. And the king would take pleasure in this. So similarly, Krishna is also taking pleasure in these things as well. The court jesters, the comics, the magicians, all these things are very pleasurable. When I was away recently, I was at a conference up on the Gold Coast, and in this conference they had some entertainment there as well. And they had one magician there, and everybody was quite spellbound by this magician. He was... what was he doing? It was a ventriloquist where you can pretend you're somebody else and speak what they're saying. And he was doing this, and he had one man up on the stage with him, and he was using the voice of a young boy or a girl for this man. He's quite a big guy too, and a macho guy, and he was using this ventriloquist technique to speak like he was a young boy or a young lady. It was quite funny. And he also was doing those hand things. We have a light and you do the handshakes, make rabbits and things, and very, very, very genius guy. It was brilliant how he was doing it. He had that song, What a Wonderful World, by whatever the guys who sang that song. Miming or mimicking, and it was very brilliant. But everyone was spellbound, everyone was like, wow, this is far out. Everyone was getting pleasure from that. So we can see that this propensity does come from Krishna as well. Krishna is also enjoying this light entertainment, for jesters and magicians and so forth. Everybody loves magicians, don't they? Yeah? Everyone likes seeing magicians and how do you do that trick, trying to work out how he made the balls appear and disappear, and people love those things. So also in Vedic times these things were present, and Krishna is enjoying all these things and the opulences of the Dwaraka. So it's interesting when we look at Krishna's pastimes in Dwaraka, because Dwaraka is also, it is a holy dharm. When we read the Vaishnava scriptures, we understand that there are different dharms within the spiritual realm. Of course, there's the Vaikuntha dharms, the holy dharms where the four Narayan forms reside, and the different Vishnu tatras reside on these Vaikuntha planetary systems. Shringa and Sridhar, Narayan, all reside on these Vaikuntha planetary systems, and we understand the mood there is great awe and reverence, great opulence. Everybody is aware that this is Vishnu, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there is a great mood of awe and reverence there. When we go to Dwaraka Dham, the rasas actually are found a bit more prominent there. Like we know about the five different rasas experienced with Krishna. So also, out of all of those different rasas, the topmost of all those rasas is obviously the conjugal ras. The Vatsalya Ras. So this is present actually within Dwaraka Dham. The Vatsalya Ras is there. We can see that Krishna has Rukmini and Satyabham and all these princesses, and he's, as we've been reading over the past few verses, that Krishna is enjoying different pastimes with these queens and princesses in the different palaces, 16,108 different palaces, all the different queen. And Krishna is expanding his body out to personally enjoy pastimes with all of these different queens, seemingly as a human being. And Krishna is taking pleasure from all these different activities that he's performing with his queens. So the Vatsalya Ras is there, and obviously not just Vatsalya Ras, but also the Vipralamba, the mood of separation, is also there. which we also find within Vrindavan, the mood of separation is there. And of course within the Vipralamba mood, there are different categorizations within that. So this Vipralamba is also experienced within Dwarka Dham as well. We can see, we were reading how the queens of Krishna were very annoyed to hear the sound of the cuckoo crow in the morning, because it meant that Krishna was going to leave them, and they were feeling these pangs of separation. So this Vipralamba Seva is there, these rasas are there, but not fully manifest. With Krishna in Dwarka, we understand that it's Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, that Krishna's expansion of Vasudeva is actually who is in Dwarka. Krishna himself, the Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, never leaves Vrindavan, always present within Vrindavan. So when this Vasudeva Krishna, when just before Krishna seemingly leaves the Dham of Vrindavan, it's this Vasudeva expansion which actually goes outside of Vrindavan to Mathura and then to Dwarka and exhibits the various pastimes there. So within Vrindavan Dham, there are very, very special pastimes there. And all of the rasas and the full emotions of love for Krishna are fully manifest within Vrindavan Dham. Whereas in Dwarka, partially manifest. Of course, all the devotees in Dwarka, I mean, understanding things in the proper context and perspective, all of them are pure devotees. They're all liberated souls, they're all nichasiddhas, but they have a certain mood or rasa or relationship with Krishna. And their particular rasa or mood, just as the residents in Vaikuntha have a certain rasa with Krishna in the awe and veneration, that is the mood that they've developed, the mood they have with Krishna. Similarly, the mood is also developed further, those rasas are developed further within Dwarka Dham. And then they're fully manifest within Vrindavan Dham, fully manifest. So we understand that in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, it is Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan in his original form, and also Krishna's internal pleasure potency is exhibited within Vrindavan Dham. In Dwarka Dham, the internal potency is also present there through expansions of Srimati Radharani. All of the queens that Krishna is enjoying pastimes in Dwarka are all expansions of the internal potency. Rukmini and Satyabhama and so forth, all expansions of Krishna's internal pleasure potency. In Vrindavan Dham, Krishna is enjoined directly with his internal pleasure potency, which is manifested in the form of Srimati Radharani. And also in Vrindavan, the pastimes being performed there are very, very unique and very, very sweet. Out of all of different Krishna's different leelas he performs in Vrindavan, in Mathura and in Dwarka Dham, the pastimes in Vrindavan are the topmost, or the sweetest of all of those pastimes. And those pastimes are very sweet because Krishna is exhibiting his childhood pastimes. And these childhood pastimes of Krishna are very, 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 very special and very, very sweet. Very, 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 very sweet for the devotees to hear and to relish. Because in Vrindavan, Krishna exhibits three different ages, from his young age, which is the Kumara, which is Krishna's age from about 0 to 5 years old, as a very, very young boy, where he is Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda's dearmost son, and he's enjoying very sweet pastimes with Nanda and Yashoda. The Vatsalya Ras, the parental Ras, is manifested in this young age. Yashoda is enjoying with Krishna, just like we're singing the Damodarastakam prayers. Krishna is in that age there, being a young boy. And it's a nice meditation, the Damodarastakam prayers, because we can really enter into that sweet mood, those sweet pastimes that are going on in this very young age, Krishna's former age, from 0 to 5. Very, very, very sweet, very, very relishable. And Satyavrata Muni obviously is immersed in his consciousness in these pastimes and is expressing his devotional ecstasy in this nice bhajan we sing in the Damodarastakam prayers, which allows us also to enter into that that mood of Krishna as a young boy, you know, stealing the pots of yogurt and butter and so forth. And of course at this age Krishna is very naughty, he's a naughty young boy, and as we read various pastimes, he's stealing the butter and giving it to the monkeys and urinating on the floor of the other Vrijavasis and getting up to all sorts of mischievous activities. These are very, very sweet pastimes, only exhibited within Vrindavan Dham. And then Krishna's age from 6 through to 10 years old is called his Pauganda age. And in this age, Krishna is enjoying pastimes with the cowherd boys particularly. And we can see that this relationship he has with the cowherd boys is also very special and very sweet as well. Because the cowherd boys in Vrindavan, they're not thinking of Krishna as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not when Krishna Krishna arises in the morning and he's been dressed by Mother Yashoda and he goes out to take the cows out to pasture with the cowherd boys. When the cowherd boys see Krishna, they're not like, Parama, Parama, Krishna, Nanda Vigraha, Ananda, Adagomadas, Paranam. Then that's not their meditation. They're not thinking that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all absolute truth, the all pervasive, powerful, infallible Supreme Lord. That's not their meditation. Their meditation is, there's our best friend and most lovable person, Krishna. So in this mood, they're able to enjoy with Krishna in a deeper relationship with him, because that and the encumbrance of this awe and reverence isn't actually there. So in this way, they can actually enjoy very pleasing and joking pastimes with Krishna. So they may be out in the cowherd pastures, and they may be playing a game where the loser has to carry the winner on the shoulders. So sometimes Krishna loses, and the cowherd boys get to be carried on Krishna's shoulders. So the relationship there is very, very special, very, very, very sweet. Krishna is enjoying many, 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 many wonderful pastimes with cowherd boys. And it's a great meditation for all the Vrijavasis to meditate on Krishna leaving the town of Vrindavan and going out to the various forests to take out the cows for the day. And this is actually, it's explained that this is the meditation of the gopis of Vrindavan are meditating on Krishna in this way. There's a young cowherd boy who's wearing a golden crown or helmet with a peacock feather, who's dressed in yellow garments, wearing a nice forest garland, and is going out to the cowherd pastures for the day with the cowherd boys. That's why the gopis and the other residents of Vrindavan are meditating on Krishna, and while he's out in the pastures, he is enjoying with the cowherd boys, and the Vrijavasis are singing bhajans about Krishna in a mood of separation from him, meditating on when Krishna is going to come back to them for the evening, where they can all come out, and in the distance they can see the haze of the cowhoos, which is kicking up all the dust in the air, and they're meditating, oh, here comes Krishna. Krishna is at last coming back to us. So all the residents of Vrindavan, they come out to greet Krishna and the cowherd boys as they're returning back from the forest. So in this way they're enjoying many, many pastimes with Krishna. So in this age, from 6 to 10 years old, Krishna becomes a young cowherd boy. And obviously Krishna is looking after many, many hundreds of thousands and millions of cows. I can't remember the exact number, but whatever how many hundred thousands of cows it is, Krishna remembers all of the cows by name. Remembers all of them by name. And he has a little string of beads with pearls on them, which counts the cows to make sure that they're all present. So many wonderful cowherding pastimes are going on. Krishna Kanai, because Krishna is a young cowherd boy, he has his cowherding stick, and has his flute with a peacock feather. Very, very, very sweet. There's a nice picture, actually, of Krishna in this age, Krishna Kanai, which was in the paraphernalia room. I've got to return it because I borrowed it for Burujan's retreat, because we were supposed to take our favourite picture of Krishna, and I've got to put it back in there, but it's a really nice picture of Krishna Kanai in this young cowherding age. Very, very nice. Then after this age, Krishna from 11 through to 15 years old, this is Krishna's Kishore age. And this is a very, very sweet age, Krishna age between 11 to 15. And this is obviously the age where Krishna manifests the topmost of all the rasas, which is the rasa dance with the gopis. And this is also the age where Krishna in Balmi Vrindavan is killing all the different demons. Various demons appear at this age. Of course, throughout Krishna's whole appearance in Balmi Vrindavan, or Vrindavan on this earth, Krishna is killing demons all from the time he was born, from Kusuma right through to Agasura and so forth. So in this age, Krishna is also killing many demons, like when he's out in the forest with the cowherd boys, all the different demons, ass demon comes to attack Krishna, and has the different pastimes of killing him, and bifurcating the different demons, and enjoying this different leelas with Lord Balaram and the cowherd boys. And Krishna is also, at this age, is enjoying the rasa dance with the cowherd girls, which obviously has all the different rasas, that is the topmost of all the rasas. So this rasa dance is a full exhibition of all the pleasure potency of Krishna. It is Krishna directly interacting with his pleasure potency. So very, very sweet and very, very transcendental, the most exalted out of all of the different pastimes. And obviously this pastime is not exhibited outside of Vrindavan. It's not exhibited in Mathura, not exhibited in the Dwaraka Dham. This is why the Vrindavan Leela is the most exalted out of all of the different pastimes. And all of the devotees, they actually meditate and pray that they can actually enter into these Vrindavan pastimes. You see, with Lord Shiva, there's a nice pastime where Lord Shiva was desiring to enter into the rasa dance, but obviously with the form he had, he wasn't able to do that. So it's explained that he took on the form of a gopi called Gopeshvara, which is a form of Lord Shiva as a gopi, and in this form he was able to enter into the rasa dance and enjoy those particular leelas. Also the goddess of Lakshmi, she cannot enter into this rasa dance because she has a certain mood of opulence and so forth, whereas in Vrindavan the gopis are very simple cowherd girls. That mood of opulence is not present there, and we can even see that the gopis, when Krishna had left Vrindavan and was in Mathura, they were wondering how Krishna was being influenced by these city girls. How is Krishna, our most lovable Krishna, how is he going to be influenced by these city girls? Because Krishna is used to enjoying a simple Vrindavan lifestyle. But of course, Krishna is actually, even though he's outside of Vrindavan, his consciousness is actually within Vrindavan. He's actually thinking of the residents of Vrindavan, even in Dwaraka, with all the opulences around him and so much enjoyment and facility and so forth, and so many pleasurable activities going on. Krishna is still meditating back in Vrindavan again. His consciousness is in Vrindavan, because those are where his most exalted, lovable devotees actually are, within Vrindavan. Of course, all the residents in Dwarka are also pure devotees and are offering very nice services to Krishna. But Krishna gets the most enjoyment, the most rust from the residents within Vrindavan. So we can see actually that the Vrindavan pastimes are the most exalted, and that even in Krishna's consciousness he's still absorbing it. And we can see a nice example to understand it is when Uddhava visits Vrindavan. When Uddhava comes to Vrindavan, he can see the exhibition of love of Godhead which is being displayed by the Vrijvasis. This mood of separation is fully being manifest, and Uddhava is actually quite astounded by this separation that the Vrijvasis are experiencing, because we know Uddhava was sent back to Vrindavan because Krishna wanted to send a message back to the gopis about, because he understood that they're feeling this great separation from him. So Uddhava is sent back, who's also a very exalted personality as well, and he's given special favour by Lord Krishna to go back to Vrindavan so he could actually see this exalted level of love of Godhead being manifested within Vrindavan. So Uddhava obviously goes to Vrindavan and spent several months back in Vrindavan, and while he is there, he was seeing this great love of Krishna being displayed, you know, through Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. When he visits Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, they're asking how is Krishna going and what is he doing and does he think of us, is he missing us, and they begin remembering all of his different pastimes he was exhibiting while in Vrindavan, and in this way they are shedding great tears of love of ecstasy, thinking of these different pastimes Krishna has performed. And then one time when Uddhava was there, he discreetly was able to visit the gopis because he had a message to pass on to them. So discreetly, when Uddhava was seeing the gopis and they began questioning Uddhava about Krishna, and is he thinking of them, and what is he doing, and when is Krishna coming back, and at that time one of the gopis explain, Srimati Radharani becomes completely bewildered in love of God, exhibiting very, very advanced, the higher stages of pure love of Godhead, and mistakes this bee as a bee as a messenger, and she begins chastising this bee. She thinks has come to take Krishna away again, and so she is bewildered by this bee which is following her and begins chastising and so forth, and then realizes actually I can't criticize Krishna, so I'm going to mention she's chastised this bee. So in this way, very great transcendental exhibitions of love of God are there. And at the end of Uddhava's visit of being in Vrindavan, he says a nice verse which I was reading the other day. This is Uddhava's final realization just before he leaves Vrindavan. He says that these cowherd girls have perfected their lives by coming to the platform of unalloyed love for Krishna. Indeed, even Lord Brahma is inferior to them. The goddess of fortune herself, who always resides in Krishna's chest, could not get the same mercy as that which the gopis obtained during the rasa dance, when Krishna embraced their necks with his mighty arms. What then to speak of other women? Indeed, I would consider myself most fortunate to take birth as even a bush or a creeper that would sometimes be touched by the dust of these gopis' lotus feet. So that was Uddhava's realization, that he'd like to just take birth as a blade of grass or a bush or a creeper, which is just touched by the dust from the feet of the cowherd girls of Vrindavan. So this is the most exalted platform to be in, because Uddhava is also a very exalted devotee. He's a pure devotee, he's a Nityasiddha, but he is meditating in this way, that let me take birth as a blade of grass or a creeper in Vrindavan, where I may be fortunate enough to get a touch of dust from the feet of these great gopi devotees. So Vrindavan is a very, very exalted, the most exalted out of all of the different dharmas. Vrindavan is the most exalted. And it's explained actually that that Mayapur Dham is actually non-different from Vrindavan Dham, that they are the same. There's no difference between them. It's considered to be offensive to think that there is a difference between Mayapur Dham and Vrindavan Dham. There are no difference there. So we understand that Lord Chaitanya, his appearance in this realm was so he could actually experience this mood of devotion that Radharani has for Krishna. Explain that these are the internal reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance in the material realm, because he wanted to understand what it was in himself that Radharani is attracted to. What is it about me that attracts Radharani? How can I understand this? So it's quite a unique thing to do. Right? What is it about me that attracts Radharani? And so he can actually appear as Lord Chaitanya to experience that. And also he wanted to experience the flavour of rus that Radharani actually has in her devotion for Krishna. Krishna wanted to taste that himself. So in this way he came as Lord Chaitanya and appeared in Mayapur Dham, Navadvip Dham. So when we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we understand that all of the different personalities in Chaitanya Leela are also found within the spiritual realm, within Vrindavan. They're all residents from Vrindavan, also appearing in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, also enjoy pastimes with him. So Mayapur Dham is also very exalted as well. A very special pastime being performed in there. So Lord Chaitanya and Krishna desiring to appear as Lord Chaitanya, we can see that this is the position of God, that when Krishna desires something, it is absolutely most beneficial for everybody. That Krishna's desire to appear as Lord Chaitanya, to experience this love of Godhead that Radharani experiences, and to understand himself, what is attractive about himself to Radharani, through this desire and Lord Chaitanya's appearance, then the result of that was obviously the whole universe became liberated. Just because of Lord Chaitanya or Lord Krishna's desire to experience himself in the mood of Radharani, the whole universe became liberated because of this desire. So this is the munificence of Krishna's desiring. Everyone has benefited through Krishna's desire, that the whole universe became liberated through Lord Chaitanya's appearance. The whole of Kali Yuga was made auspicious by Lord Chaitanya's appearance, that the most unqualified, the most low, the most abominable of people, conditioned souls, the Nichibuddhas, are able to experience highest things, this Vrindavan Dham, Rasa and Vrindavan Dham Leela. Even though completely unqualified to do so, completely fallen, we can actually understand, or through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, are given a window of opportunity to get access into this Vrindavan Dham. So this is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Quite inconceivable mercy. It can't actually be understood. We can't even appreciate it, actually, all said and done. We can't actually appreciate the mercy of Lord Chaitanya coming to the material realm. Of course, with the internal reasons there, but the external reasons of spreading the holy name and spreading the Yuga Dham, Harinam, Sankirtan, we can't appreciate it properly. It's quite so deep, actually. Lord Chaitanya is so deep, and Krishna is also so deep that it can't be understood, can't be fully appreciated. But the mercy is there and available to everybody to get access into Krishna's most intimate pastimes and the most exalted of all the dharms, Vrindavan Dham. That mercy has been given through Lord Chaitanya. So inconceivable mercy is available. So it is nice to meditate on these different pastimes of Krishna and Krishna's different leelas and different dharms, the Vrindavan Dham Leela and Mathura Dham and Vrindavan Dham and Mayapur Dham. Very, very holy places. And obviously our goal in life is so we can reside within these dharms. And Lord Chaitanya is giving us access into these dharms. It's explained even that when we visit the holy dharms, that there's a form of Lord Shiva who oversees the tetas or the holy dharms. So when you visit the holy dharms, the acharyas explain that we should pray to Lord Shiva in order to get access into the dharms. Because in the Bhoomi Vrindavan, or the Vrindavan in the material realm, there is a layering of the material energy covering it over. So just as we may not be able to see the deity form of Krishna, we're talking about this yesterday, we may see the deity form of Krishna, but we may not be able to see Krishna as he is on the altar. Krishna performing pastimes with Radharani, or Lord Chaitanya performing pastimes with Lord Nityananda, or Lord Jagannath performing pastimes with Balarama Subhadra Devi. They're going on right now. We may not be able to see them because our consciousness is covered over. We have material consciousness. And this is actually what blocks our vision of seeing the deity as it is. As we see with Srila Prabhupada, he was seeing more than his disciples were seeing. Like one time Tamal Krishna Maharaj explained that when he was with Prabhupada had come back from a program, and he was with Prabhupada, who was going into his residence at the time, and then Prabhupada had deities of Radha Krishna, and Prabhupada commented how, oh, just see how nicely Radha and Krishna are dancing, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, you can see it, but Prabhupada was seeing it. So Prabhupada, because his consciousness was on such an exalted pure platform, he could see Krishna as he was in the deity form. So similarly, we can see Krishna as he is if our consciousness is pure enough, but when we have material desires within the heart, then our pure vision is actually blocked off. We can't see things as they are. So that's why it's explained that the acharyas define pure devotional service as anyabhalashitashanyam gana kanab kamadi aritam anukulena krishna nushilanam bhakti uttamam. That this is pure devotional service, that when one is engaging to service to Krishna favourably, without jnana, speculation, without karma, or without desire for anything in return, then that is pure devotional service, and then consciousness can actually go into a higher level of understanding. So by rendering devotional service, it's explained in the Nectar of Devotion, Sava Parivane Muktam Tat Parivar Nimalam Hrishikesha Hrishikana Sevanam Bhakti Uchite, that by rendering devotional service, then these upadis, or these false designations that are covering us over, will be removed, the senses will become purified, and then one can actually see things as they are. So to enter into the dharm, enter into the higher consciousness, then we have to be performing pure devotional service. And this is the process that Srila Prabhupada has given us, is the path of pure devotional service. The whole system that Prabhupada has given us is a system of purification for purifying the consciousness so that we can become qualified into performing pure devotional service without desire for return, without speculation. So this is the process that Prabhupada has given us. So to enter into the dharms and enter into the higher consciousness, then we have to be performing pure devotional service. Krishna says, bhakti mam abhijanante, that only through devotional service can it be understood. So this is the path given by the acharyas and taught by Srila Prabhupada in ISKCON, is a path of pure devotional service. Free of all mental speculation, free of all kaitavadam, free of all cheating religion. So the Bhagavatam strips back everything and presents things as they are. Pure devotion to Krishna, pure devotees of Krishna, and Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan. So this is the presentation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the most exalted out of all of the shastras, out of all the religions in the world, all the scriptures in the world. Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting the most purest, most exalted understanding of love of Godhead. And through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we are given access to the Bhagavatam, and through the mercy of Lord Srila Prabhupada, we're also given access into the deeper understandings of Bhagavatam. So anyway, we can stop there. The class is going on a bit late. And are there any questions or points at all from what we've been discussing? Let's explain that when Krishna left, was leaving Vrindavan to go to Mathura, he had a special an expansion which enabled the gopis to experience the Vipralamba. So it's actually a form of Krishna which was manifested in Vrindavan at that time, which is enabling the gopis to experience this love of Krishna. He was there, but in a form which was enabling them to experience this Vipralamba. But Krishna was present there. And in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna is always present in Goloka Vrindavan. In Balmi Vrindavan, it may appear that Krishna has left, but actually he hasn't left. He's there, and he's present in a form, which is allowing him to experience the Vipralamba. And when Krishna goes to Mathura or to Dwarka, then it's this Vasudeva expansion which is actually going there. That's how the acharyas explain it. Yeah. Of course, I don't have full realization on the whole subject, so I can't give you the pure analysis. But we just have to go by what the acharyas have explained. Yeah. I don't have much realization on that at all. Absolutely, yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was the form he was in. Yeah. Yeah, the form which is enabling to experience that that mood of separation, even though he was there. They're experiencing seemingly a form of separation, but that's Krishna's mercy on them as well, because he's able to take them to a higher level of bhava and bhakti by seemingly not being there. Krishna's special mercy.
You made that point that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, that she cannot go to Vrindavan to take part in Sankhya. I heard Bhakti Chaitanya Swami explaining that in a very sweet way. He was saying, like, the goddess of fortune once was desiring to go to Vrindavan, but then she heard that the goddess of fortune was passing away.
Different devotees have different bhavs, different relationships with Krishna, and different aspects of Krishna's personality or appearance, they stimulate that love of the devotees. Yeah. So was interesting when you look at the different dharmas, different stimuluses for their love of Krishna to manifest, and the different bhavas and vyabhichari bhavas and so forth to manifest. And in Vrindavan, obviously, because Krishna's living very simply, it's hard for some devotees to relate to that. But ultimately, our sadhana we're practicing is, Bhanu Sama is explaining, our sadhana is actually there to bring out that certain relationship we have with Krishna, so we can develop a certain bhava, a certain relationship with Krishna as we move through the different stages of the process of devotional service, from Shraddha through to Prema. And the whole goal of the sadhana is to develop this internal bhava with Krishna. Yeah. So everyone has a different relationship with Krishna. Everyone has a different rasa with Krishna. And that's obviously revealed to us in time through Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada said we shouldn't worry so much about if we're a peacock in the spiritual world, or if we're a gopi or a cow. He says don't worry about these things. Just wait for Krishna to, in time, when you're qualified to reveal these things to you. And I think Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, first deserve, then desire. So first of all, we have to deserve through our service to Krishna to desire these higher things. With the farms, Prabhupada more or less said, either, you know, you're in the city, you're preaching. Prabhupada said devotees don't have any taste for living in the city. The cities are generally very passionate and a lot of sinful activity going on. I was even listening to a lecture by Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Sydney one time when he was explaining why are the devotees living here in Sydney, and why are we here for in Sydney, living in this horrible city near King's Cross. So much sinful activity going on, and Prabhupada said it's out of compassion that devotees stay in the cities for. We feel compassionate for the conditioned souls who are struggling very hard in material existence, and especially in the cities where they have the grind of daily city life. So it's a mood of compassion that we live in the cities for, because we want to give the conditioned souls the opportunity to engage in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said that's why we should be in cities, is to preach in some way or another. Otherwise devotees don't have any interest in living in the city. Why do we want to live in the city for? Because it is a distraction from cultivating Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said, either you preach or you plough. In other words, if you're in the city and if you're not going to preach, then you should be in the countryside and working on the land. Preach or plough. So be in the countries and create rural farming communities and raise families and engage in cow protection and so forth. So that was Prabhupada's formula, so that we could have these farming communities, so devotees who weren't actively preaching in cities, which generally speaking is grihasthas, because grihasthas usually have, you know, obligations and duties and responsibilities. So Prabhupada encouraged the farming communities, especially for grihasthas, to practice Krishna consciousness in a rural setting and raise families in that environment. And then in the city, single men and ladies can preach, and also grihasthas who want to preach as well, be in the cities to preach and spread Krishna consciousness. Mm. So, both things have to go on, definitely. Both things are there. Of course, some people, everyone has a different propensity, so you know, some people enjoy being in the country and working on the land and so forth, whereas others, especially being brought up in a western city, it's easy to relate to being in a city. And you can relate to it, and people can relate to you because you're used to it. Whereas you find the devotees who have been raised in cities to go to a farming community, it can be a bit of a culture shock, actually, removing yourself from that environment and going to a countryside and there's only peace and quiet around you. It's like, it takes time to adjust. Yeah. So So yeah, sometimes you have to see where you best fit in, what best suits your nature and your propensities and so forth. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's actually, in one sense, it's quite hard, left Vrindavan to come and preach, so it's actually a more exalted thing, actually. Prabhupada was an Uttama Adhikari devotee, but he had to come down to the platform of Majjhima Adhikari to preach. So preaching is actually, even a pure devotee who's come straight from the spiritual world, one of Krishna's most intimate associates from the spiritual realm, came to preach in the city, so it's a very exalted position to be in. Nothing wrong with it at all. And also, living in a rural environment doesn't mean you stop preaching. Also, preaching has to go on in a rural environment too. And Prabhupada wanted, we were talking about Van Ashram yesterday, that Prabhupada wanted these farming communities so we could develop Van Ashram. That was the idea of having a farming community so that the cow protection and so forth could actually go on. So that was part of Prabhupada's far-reaching vision for developing a social infrastructure that could allow people to practice Krishna consciousness and use their propensities in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada wanted these farming communities for that reason, so they were a form of preaching, so he could set an example for people to see. And Prabhupada even said himself that Krishna consciousness is not for everybody. We shouldn't expect everybody to take to Krishna consciousness, but there should at least there should be an ideal class of people who are setting the example for the rest of human society to see what the standard of human civilization actually is. So Prabhupada wanted farming communities, he wanted devotees to develop agriculture, he wanted cow protection to go on, he wanted an ideal class of people in a society to show the rest of the world the proper standard for human civilization. Yeah. So